Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Ben Annis. Thursday Night Football has the Dolphins in Cincy to play the Bengals. Just saw Joe Burrow decked out in a nice suit. Tua Tagovailoa is going to play in this game. So I guess if they had some sort of investigation, the NFLPA and the NFL in regards to Tua's possible concussion or lack thereof, that is concluded because he's going to play, apparently. I just had a wonky back. Nothing to see here. As he led the Dolphins to a comeback and a victory over what many people assumed and still maybe do is the best team in the NFL. Very happy to be joined now by Mike Golic Jr., host of the Gojo Show podcast for DraftKings. And Mike, thanks for doing this, first of all. And we're going to get to the NFL in just a second. I'm riding a high because we just had Frankie Lasagna on. I don't know if you caught that yesterday in Aaron Judge's 61st home run.
Yes, I did see that moment. I was not aware we had a hero with that particular name, which only adds to this all-time moment. But what did Frankie give you guys here? Because he was my immediate thought. When we all saw that replay, we saw the same thing, which is three guys over there, which apparently includes Frankie L., reaching for history and having it fall right out of their hands. Is he okay?
Yeah, Frankie is fine because Frankie was the guy wearing the light blue jersey and not the guy wearing the dark blue jersey. Frankie did his best, but let's be honest about Frankie and his relation to the other guy. Frankie had no chance. It was the other guy who got like the tip of his glove on that baseball, and it was 61, not 62. But I cannot imagine. And the other guy's not speaking. Like, he's not doing media. Nobody can track him down. Apparently some reporters went into the stands yesterday to try and talk to him, and he said no, and he was despondent. Like, I get it. It would have been a tough catch, but can you imagine living with yourself knowing that the 61st home run off the bat of Aaron Judge touched your glove and you didn't catch it?
No, you know what? That's bad enough to live with. But then, you know, listen, you can't go out the coward's death, right? You got to face the music.
Yes.
We have plenty of players that have bad moments that have to sit up there in the press conference. And if you're this guy, what's the fault in this? If you go up and start doing this, maybe you get some sympathy gift out of this. Maybe Aaron Judge and the Yankees look kindly on you and decide, hey, you weren't a part of this moment. Like, we're in a day and age right now in the U.S. where we got NIL deals all over the place. There is potential here if you want to step into the light and own what was a lackluster moment for you. This guy's missing an opportunity as far as I'm concerned.
Mike, you're so right. Like, that is the obvious take that he faced the music like we've seen so many of our great athletes do in moments of despair, that they still do their media availability, you know, rise to the occasion. But instead this guy, I don't know. He was so despondent that he can't possibly speak about it. I don't know. He's going to have to see the highlight for the rest of his life. And the only upside, I guess, is that it was 61, and 62 is going to be an even bigger deal. And maybe we never even see the video of 61. Maybe it's 62 that just totally supersedes it. Anyways, don't know his name. It's not Frankie Lasagna. And that's part of the reason why Frankie Lasagna gets his flowers, right? Like, when you got a name like Frankie Lasagna, you were made for the 15 minutes of fame that you get.
Yep, we're all looking for a hero right now. We're all looking for something to latch on to. Like you said, 62 is going to be the moment. But right now, you can own your place in history for as brief a time as that may be, and Frankie Lasagna decided to take that moment.
Well done. Well done. He saw it in front of him. He grabbed it. All right. Dolphins in Cincy tonight for Thursday Night Football. It's a good game, despite the Bengals kind of stumbling out of the gate. Week one against the Steelers, I mean, they had a couple of kicks to win it. And, boy, they lost the turnover battle by five and still went to overtime and had chances to win that football game. But let's focus on the Dolphins because, boy, that was the game of the week on the schedule last week, and it lived up to it. It was scorching hot in Miami, and we know the Bills' secondary was totally, totally depleted, but the Dolphins are atop the AFC East, and they're undefeated. Are we talking about maybe the best team in the AFC?
I would still rank Buffalo ahead of them at this point, just because of, I think, what we've seen for the majority of this game. But what Miami does deserve credit for, and the reason I said really after week one, this is a team that already looked like a playoff team based on what we saw in that outing, based on what we've seen early in this season from Tua, which is composure. He is comfortable and he is composed in big moments when he's got to make plays, because the offense hasn't gone out and really run over anybody. It's been a couple of bursts and big time moments where he stepped up and made a big throw to Tyreek Hill, or stepped up and hit a big play like we saw at the end of the game to Jalen Waddle this past week. Really, you've got that in conjunction with a defense that I think needs to start to get more credit in all of this, because Melvin Ingram has been really active in backfield. I think they've come with really good packages and plans as far as how to attack opposing teams. I thought that was on display against Josh Allen. So they are absolutely ahead of where I think a lot of us had them slotting in this season. We thought that it was going to be a runaway for the Buffalo Bills in that division, and Miami's come out and showed they're not afraid. They were playing in the same hot game as you were. Even if you say they live down there and they're used to it, heat is still heat, and they've managed to go out and respond in some really critical moments. So I think they deserve a ton of credit for that, even if they might be a little far out ahead of where their production might indicate that they are.
So the Twitter doctors were all over that game, right? Because Tua has the wobbly legs right before halftime, and everybody thought he was done after banging his head off the turf. And then he returns, and after the game, we're told it's a back injury. We're also told there's going to be an investigation. It's one thing for people who never played the game like myself, although I should say I did play 1 year of Division III Ontario high school football in my senior year. So you know what? Maybe I shouldn't say I never played the game. But you played the game, I would say, at a significantly higher level, Mike. Like, what do you make of the two, the conversation around him and the potential concussion? Apparently didn't have one, and now he's going to play in this game.
Yeah, so I would say this one, I think now, because the NFLPA had that investigation, because we've had the entire week where you weren't going to be able to avoid this, and I think for that reason, I am willing to, and this is a dangerous thing to do with the NFL, trust them on this front, that what they're saying here is the truth. Because the one misnomer, and a lot of people said, well, look how Tua played in the second half. I know plenty of guys that walked into halftime locker rooms with bad concussions, who probably shouldn't have been out on the field, who went out in the second half and played darn good football and managed to put it together without even being able to read the time on the scoreboard. So that's not an indicator. I've also had plenty of back injuries, so I usually know what that walk looks like, and I didn't think it was there. But with how much time has passed and with how many eyeballs can and should be on this situation and were on this situation, I don't think that they could sneak it past them. I don't think that they could manage to push this under the rug if it were actually something there. And so I'm certainly going to hope for the NFL's sake, for the PA's sake, because if he steps out there and they've done this investigation, now they are tacit in this. And for Tua's sake, just in general, this is a guy who's already overcome so much injury-wise. You hope he's being given a fair opportunity to protect himself if he's going to be put in that situation.
Yeah, 100%. But, I wish him all the best. And from an entertainment standpoint, it's great that he's in there against Joe Burrow, who's been sacked 15 times, Burrow has. And that leads the NFL, Mike. And the Bengals' offensive line was a big point of discussion this offseason. Can they keep him upright?
They can. Offensive lines, especially in modern pro football, where you've got so much less time now in training camp in the offseason to get reps. And that's what you need. An offensive line, like, you got to cook it low and slow like a brisket. There's no shock changing this thing. You've got to put the time in if you want this to come out on the other side good. And we hear year after year, the first quarter of the NFL season is like a preseason for a lot of teams. But for Cincinnati and their offense, for Zach Taylor and company, they've got to start to do more on offense. Last year they got by because you couldn't protect Joe. So you said, all right, we'll spread it out. We'll do the things Joe likes, and we'll just let him turn it loose. And he was able to. But now you're starting to see Joe Burrow and his style of play wear some of the bad habits that come with being under duress as much as he was. You cannot physically get hit. You know, forget getting sacked 70 times last season, how much he got hit overall. You can't do that without starting to feel footsteps in your life when you're in the pocket there, and even if nothing's coming. So they've got to start to do more variety-wise on offense schematically. It's been too much Joe Burrow's in shotgun, they're passing. Joe Burrow's under center, they're running. They've become predictable, I think, to a certain extent. And now Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase greatness can no longer just overcome that. So they've got to continue to build more into that playbook. And Zach Taylor, who's a part of one of these coaching trees that we love in the modern NFL of all the McVay and Shanahan guys, has to start to go out there and afford his quarterback some of the same help that we're seeing Mike McDaniel give to Tua Tagovailoa, that we saw even Matt LaFleur give to Aaron Rodgers, who hardly needs the help. That's got to be the difference now, because what they've done has become way too stagnant on offense.
Well, Josh McDaniels is part of the Bill Belichick coaching tree, and his Raiders team is off to an 0-3 start. There's super high hopes for that team. He's now 11-20 in his 31 games as an NFL head coach. a year and a bit with the Broncos. Like, at what point here do we have to say that maybe Josh McDaniels ain't it?
It's not going to be this year just because they just signed him and because they're going to have the out and saying, all right, if you're Josh McDaniels, every head coach wants to be defined by the quarterback that they get to choose. And that's why so many of us, I think, were focused on San Fran this year, because now you had Kyle Shanahan with Trey Lance, who they drafted and spent all that capital to go get. That story for another day. But for this one, Josh McDaniels can look and say, all right, you know what? Derek Carr is not the problem this year, but if I am a guy who is based on offense the way Josh McDaniels is, I'm saying I want my crack at this at least with my guy before I have the chance to be judged. And they've got an out contractually with Derek Carr next year where you can get rid of him for comparatively less money. And I feel like that'll happen before we really render a final judgment on Josh McDaniels. We knew there was going to be issues with the offensive line. We knew there was going to be issues with the secondary, especially outside. But even in this division, I don't think anyone expected the Raiders to be 0-4 to start the year.
No. I mean, in a 17-game regular season, there's still time to turn it around. But, man, that's a big hole to dig yourself out of. The Eagles on the other side of the equation. In the NFC, I guess it still feels wide open, but now we definitely have a favorite. I mean, they're the only other undefeated team in the NFL and the only one in the NFC, 3-0, are the Eagles. And Jalen Hurts seemingly has taken a jump. He's third in yards per game. Did you expect this out of him?
No, and I should have, because all Jalen Hurts has ever done is this: get better every year. It might not be the giant steps like we've seen, you know, Josh Allen take since he's been in the NFL, but you go back to his time at Alabama, and every year Jalen got better. He got better when he went to Oklahoma. He got better when he first got under center in Philadelphia. And this is just in this guy's DNA. You couple that with the fact that they have such a good roster around him that is finally healthy, right? You look defensively at what Brandon Graham's meant coming back this year, what you've seen up front with Fletcher Cox and the way he's playing this season. You know, big play Slay in the back end we knew was there, but across the board, that defense on the back end of it has been much more sustainable and much less injury plagued. It's early in the season, and that's usually what's undone Philly. But then Jalen on offense, he's got a healthy offensive line in front of him. And when you've got those guys out there, when you've got Lane Johnson and you've got Jason Kelsey, who have been such good, consistent pros in front of this guy, and you add A.J. Brown to go over and add the middle of the field to Jalen's resume, it's just really given him every tool to succeed, which is what, remember, the Baltimore Ravens did for Lamar Jackson. It's what the Bills did with Josh Allen, going out and moving all that work to get to Stephon Diggs and believing that he could help elevate Josh even further. And he did. And so this is what good organizations do. This is what good teams do. And Jalen Hurts has absolutely benefited from that, but he's also played really well within the structure of all those parts and has managed to even elevate them some, which is what you expect and ask these quarterbacks to do.
Well, I just said it, but I should ask you the question. Like, are they the favorites in the NFC? Because it really did feel like you could make the case for a bunch of teams in that conference, and the AFC was there was a bunch of teams at the top, like the Chiefs and the Bills looked like the cream of the crop in the NFL, and the NFC just seemed like a little tier below that. And I know we still got some all-time great quarterbacks in that conference, and Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, but are the Eagles the favorites in your mind out of the NFC?
Yeah, I think they're the best team in the NFC right now. I know that, and maybe you could give some credence to the defending Super Bowl champs, who are certainly going to be alive in that. We've seen the Rams, outside of that opening night fiasco, start to look more like themselves. We know Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers will be heard from, but you can look around at those rosters. Tampa Bay, major flaws on offense, an offensive line that's almost been a full hockey line change because of retirement, trades, or injury. And then for Green Bay, same thing. They're waiting to still get David Bakhtiari back full-time. They're absorbing the loss of the best wide receiver in football in Devontae Adams. There's a lot of change there. Philly has been all adds and health right now. And we know health is a big predictor. But at this point, if we're sitting here and looking at rosters, you would say Philly probably the most complete roster in the NFC at this point.
Well, and speaking of health, Lamar Jackson's season a year ago, not healthy, and he is healthy right now. And, I just talked about Jalen Hurts maybe taking a step forward with his passing this season. This is a guy that's won an MVP award, but Lamar Jackson leads the NFL with 119 passer rating. And that's the last step, right? The pocket passing. Are you seeing a difference in his game right now?
I'm seeing a difference in the offense. Lamar could do this. And we had him on our podcast, Gojo, wherever you get your podcast. And he said, he's like, I played in Bobby Petrino's offense in college. I know how to pass from the pocket. Now, at Louisville, he didn't have an offensive line that was going to keep him safe, so he had to do a lot of that extra stuff. And as he pointed out, I just make the running look good. He's been in pocket systems before, and so much of the criticism with Baltimore, and rightly so, has been what Greg Roman's plan has been on offense. We remember going back to last year, the charge for them was start to figure out this passing attack. And so what have they done? They've put him under center more. There's been much more of an improved look at pocket passing. Devin Duvernay on the outside here, Rashad Bateman at wide receiver have both started to step up and make plays in spots outside of just the tight end room where Mark Andrews and company are the ones we're used to Lamar throwing to. It's almost exclusively been from there. We haven't seen as much of Lamar Jackson in the read option run game. And so I think he's always had this in here, but I think Baltimore has finally put him in more consistent positions to do this. Some of that's been necessity because offensive line-wise, you're still missing Ronnie Stanley at left tackle, and you've been even more injured there. So the offensive line has some question marks that the Buffalo Bills could and should absolutely exploit this weekend. But Lamar's always had this. The Ravens' offense is just finally leaning more into this side of his gifts. They're going to need the legs eventually because part of what makes Lamar different than every other quarterback on the planet is what he can do with his legs. But right now he's reminding you, and this is a worthwhile reminder because we know when it gets to playoff football, teams are going to force him in here is, no, he could sling it from the pocket provided you give him the chances to do so.
We have yet to see really what Zach Wilson can do. I mean, so far, not so great. And, well, so far this season, we haven't seen him. But he might be back this week against the Steelers, and no T.J. Watt certainly helps his cause. I mean, at what point do we make a call on him? It's obviously it's not this week, but what is your level of confidence that the Jets haven't screwed up yet another first-round quarterback?
I'm willing to give this one a while. Really, I think it's got to be the season. Like, you have to, as long as Zach is healthy, you got to keep him out there and find out. Because to your point, and it's right between last year and this year, you've already lost out on a bunch of key information points. And with these young quarterbacks, you need to get as much information as you can because these are the most important financial decisions you'll make as an organization. We're watching the other team in New York go through this right now with Daniel Jones. They didn't pick up his fifth-year option. And so it makes it very unlikely that we're going to see DJ back in that uniform because I don't know if they're going to be able to do enough under a new staff to see what he's got in this season. With what we've got going on with the Jets and with Zach, at least you've got that same coaching staff. They've got time under task with him already. They've been around the building with him a bunch. But you need to see him out there on the field. So I think it's got to be this whole season. We've seen some of the improvements starting to take hold. Garrett Wilson has been an absolute revelation at wide receiver for that team. Breece Hall at running back has looked awesome. Some of the weapons have stepped up around the quarterback position. And so now you've got to plug Zach back in there, and you've got to start to see some of that maturity from last year. Taking better care of the football than he did, and just staying on the field at this point has to be the biggest goal.
The Jets with Joe Flacco have scored more points than the Denver Broncos with Russell Wilson, though, through three games this season, Mike. And, yeah, so much of the focus on that team is Nathaniel Hackett and, the miscues that we've seen out of the head coach through the first couple of weeks at least. But, man, that offense doesn't look anywhere near where we expected it to look, especially with all they invested in a Super Bowl caliber quarterback and Russell Wilson. I mean, he's not 40 here. We are talking about a guy in his 30s, but is there a chance that Russell Wilson's cooked?
I don't know if he's cooked, but I think, and listen, I'm guilty of this too. I was someone that was very much shouting, let Russ cook. And I thought Pete Carroll was the problem. And then him holding Russ back and kind of holding on to a version of offense that we thought had passed the NFL by was the problem with that team. And that may not have been fully the case here. Now, I think some of both is at fault here, but I think now what we're seeing is, all right, if you're just going to put Russ in situations where it's got to be straight drop back and he's got to be the one to win it for you, it's probably not the one like that at this point. He's probably going to need more of what we always thought was the strength of this team, being well-rounded, being able to do a lot of things well here. And that gel of, I think, one, the coach understanding, what do we want to be? Who do we want to be? That 4th and 5 in the first game where they ended up waffling and kicking a 60-something yard field goal, to me was indicative of a team that wasn't sure who they were in that waning moment of the game. And we can hear Nathaniel Hackett say that was part of the plan. Well, then I have to question what brought you to that plan. Because to your point, you spent all this money on a quarterback. He should be the one you're putting the ball in the hands of at the end of the game. And that's a message that gets sent to everyone on the team. When you see mistakes made in critical moments, all of us are looking up around the locker room going, what are we doing and why? because we all know who makes the money. We all know who's expected. And we all know who we are supposed to count on. And if we're not seeing that person empowered and we're not seeing confidence in the coaching staff put into that guy's hands, then we're all wondering what the hell's up, because if he's not going to be the one, everyone's looking around and we all kind of count change at some point going, all right, well, if not him, then what are we supposed to do here? What's our identity supposed to be? And that's got to be what the conversation is for Denver right now.
It's Mike Golic Jr., host of the Gojo Show podcast for DraftKings. Mike, you have a good name, but it's not as good as Frankie Lasagna. Thanks for this.
I will spend the rest of my life trying to make Frankie Lasagna proud.
Yeah, you should. Thank you, Mike. See ya.
Thanks.
Mike Golic Jr. Yeah, Frankie Lasagna. Like Francis, right? Francis Lasagna. Frankie, though. Got to go by Frankie. Seems like a good guy, so I don't hope that his 15 minutes runs up now. I fear for Frankie Lasagna's long-term stay in the zeitgeist. It's a good 24 hours, Frankie. He made his hay. Well, the getting was good. Heard and saw plenty of Frankie Lasagna today. We partook. He gave us what we asked for. And then I think by tomorrow, Frankie Lasagna's on his merry way. Check out his restaurant, though. That's the smart move, is to keep the Bills ahead of the Dolphins in your power rankings or your estimations of the best teams in the AFC and the NFL as a whole. They were totally, totally depleted. Well, their bodily fluids in that game, because it was 1,000 degrees, and Stephon Diggs looked like he wanted to take a nap for about three quarters of the football game. But also their defensive secondary, a ton of injuries. And still, they had a chance to win the game. Should have won the game. Josh Allen had a throw that you, if you just saw the throw Josh Allen had to make to the end zone on fourth down, and you said, what are the odds that Josh Allen makes that throw? You're like 99.999%. That's nothing for Josh. And he skips the football into the end zone, and then even after that, still had a chance to tie and win the game after the butt punt. Yeah, no, the Bills are still, I think, on paper, the superior team. But kudos to the Dolphins, who did not have a letdown. That was part of the discussion around the Dolphins going into that game as well, that it was so emotional, the comeback against the Ravens in week two, coming back from 21 down in the fourth quarter, that maybe there would be some sort of hangover effect, that maybe it would be difficult to get yourself back up for a football game, even though it was against a division opponent. But they did that super well, which leads me to believe that there will be no hangover tonight on Thursday Night Football against another good AFC team, despite the emotional victory over the Buffalo Bills and being 3-0 and Tua leading his team to a third straight win and erasing the narratives that might have surrounded him this offseason. And Tyreek Hill certainly helps. When we come back, Sarah Walsh is an NFL reporter based in Florida, in Tampa, in fact. But I don't think she's in Tampa right now because they're dealing with Hurricane Ian. Sunday Night Football has the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at home. And there was some talk that maybe that game would be moved to Minnesota. But apparently everything's good to go in the Tampa St. Pete area, so they will actually play that game there. But we're going to talk some Bucks with Sarah, but we're also going to talk about yesterday's events down at Rogers Center, because she's the wife of Blue Jays bullpen coach Matt Bushman. You may have seen her tweets yesterday. She was in jest tweeting about divorce because her husband just gave Aaron Judge's 61st home run ball back to the Yankees. We'll talk to Sarah about that and get her take on a Bucs team that is still good. They're 2-1, but a disappointing loss to the Packers last week and some curious actions by Tom Brady and some attitude and some decision-making. And when we're not used to seeing Tom Brady, who's Mr. Discipline, taking a delay a game penalty on a 2-point conversion and looking around for somebody to take a timeout that he doesn't have anymore. Sarah Walsh of NFL Network joins me next as the Fan Drive Time continues. I'm Ben Ennis, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If the guy in the outfield with the Bichette jersey on would have just turned his glove over and backhanded that ball, guess what, Jeff? He's got that ball in his back pocket. He's catching it because you know what it did? He had a little he had a little side spin to it because he's a little out in out and around it. If he just turns his glove, if he just turns his glove over the other way, he's not throwing his glove at somebody.
I'm sure that's making the dude feel a lot better, Kevin. I'm sure
turn your glove over.
It was Kevin Barker with Jeff Blair. Blue Jays talk yesterday after the game. Blue Jays lose it, but I was going to say inconsequential. It's consequential, but not as consequential as Aaron Judge hitting home run number 61. We already talked to Frankie Lasagna, but of course, yeah, I'm more focused on the dark Blue Jays jersey guy who's wearing a Bo Bichette jersey, and that's who Kevin was talking about. It touched his glove. Like, he had a chance to catch it, but he's not a professional baseball player or a former professional baseball player. The guy who caught it or ended up with the ball actually is Blue Jays bullpen coach Matt Bushman. He handed it over to Zach Britton, and it eventually made its way over to Aaron Judge, naturally. Let's talk to the wife of Matt Bushman, NFL Network reporter, Sarah Walsh. Sarah, first of all, are you all right? Everything's you're safe and sound in Florida there with the hurricane stuff?
We are safe and sound. We don't have power. It's been a week here, but we were supposed to take a direct hit in our area, and it ended up at the last minute going just south of us to the Fort Myers area. And there is, you know, catastrophic and total devastation there. So we feel fortunate and then awful at the same time that our good fortune is somebody else's just, you know, total catastrophe. And we have family and friends down there and colleagues. And so we are very fortunate in the Tampa Bay area, but just south of us, it's really bad.
Well, thinking of those people for sure. All right, to your husband, who had the ball in his hand. Now, he's an employee of a Major League Baseball team, so I don't know what, like, contractually, legally, like, the obligation was there to hand the ball over. Well, can you explain this to me?
So I have been in nothing but hurricane coverage and then Buccaneers hurricane coverage, and so I wasn't watching the game, and honestly, I had gotten so many texts from people over the course of these last couple of days about, you know, our safety and our family and all this stuff. And it was so funny because obviously there was a point last night where Matt got his hands on this ball that all of a sudden I was not watching the game. I start getting my phone's blowing up and it's no longer about hurricane coverage. And it was just everyone going crazy about this baseball. So I obviously didn't talk to him until after the game, but that was the very first thing I asked him was, because I don't know how it works. And I, knowing that, and we've actually talked about this before in other scenarios where people, you know, can break records and, like, do you give the ball back? And both of us have always been of the mindset that you give it back. And I've always felt really strongly about that. But so I knew that no matter what the rules were, like, he would have given it back. But I did ask him. It was the first question I said. I was like, hey, like, what is the deal on that? Does somebody come over and force you to give it back? And he said, no, nobody forces them to give it back. But what he did say is that, you know, they're in the middle of the game at this point still. And he said, like, Major League Baseball and the Yankees, like, descended on their bullpen. And I don't know how much you can see that because it's, you know, underneath in this tunnel. And these guys just immediately descended and they're trying to have this conversation about the ball. And Matt's like, hey, we got a game going on. Like, we still have a game. Like, we're not in the middle of, like, it's not a break here to, like, talk about it. And then that's how he ended up giving it to I guess he knows Zach Britton, like Zach Britton, one of the Yankees pitchers, had come over and talked to Matt, and Matt handed it to him to be like, I know you'll take care of this and get it to Aaron or whatever. So he would have, put some jokes on Twitter that then got widely shared about a divorce because he handed that ball over. But we knew he would hand it over. But he told me he was not, like, I don't know what would have happened later on, but it wasn't like a predetermined talk, at least, where they said you had to hand it over.
Yeah.
I don't know if that would have happened later, but I don't know, like in other years past when it's been like a home run record breaking ball kind of situation, I don't know if we've seen that and what the rule is. I mean, I think the common decency thing is, especially when you're in that industry, like he would give him the ball back. It's not a question. So, but yeah, I'm sure that Frankie Lasagna and several other people were very disappointed that the ball ended up in Matt's hands last night.
Oh man. Frankie Lasagna is yeah. He's devastated, not as devastated as the other guy though, because yeah, the other guy actually got his glove on the ball. Did Matt he like take a picture with the ball? Cause like, I'd be checking it out. They're different, but they've got like some sort of marking on them indicating the specialness of the ball. Is there anything that Matt has to commemorate the moment? I know his team lost and that's probably what he cares more about, but I know it's just one of 162 and the Blue Jays clinched a playoff spot. So get over it. But yeah, is there anything he has from that game in that moment?
No, well, first of all, and it's so Matt that like would not show any emotion, just like walked back like it was nothing. And he goes, Sarah, listen, he goes, I knew that every camera was going to be right on me. He's like, I knew exactly like what was going to happen the second that ball was in my hand. He's like, we just gave up a home run. He goes, I was, ticked, and he said it in a different way for Timmy Meza, who he loved very much. And he's like, so I was mad. He's like, and then I was not going to show any reaction. Like, I wasn't going to be like, oh, this is cool. Like, we just gave up a homer. He also understands baseball history and, like, what it means. And so he did say, so I know he looked at it, and then he said he flipped the ball to David Howell, who's another guy that worked in the bullpen with him, because he said he knew that he would freak out and think it's, like, really cool that he was holding it. So he kind of, like, did that as, like, a gesture of, like, check this out. But then they obviously come and authenticate. That's why, like, the officials come, because they're coming to, like, authenticate it immediately so that there's not, like, a mix up in the bullpen of, like, that ball with another ball. So that's why those guys were down there immediately, because they put, like, a special sticker on it and, like, and they do all the things to make it, like, super official. But I'm happy that Aaron Judge was able to, like, literally hand that ball to his mom after the game. Because if you're dealing with a situation, like, that doesn't necessarily happen if you're negotiating with fans or, depending on how that works. So I think that was, I know that Matt felt that was really cool that he was able to, like, give it to his mom after the game. And his comment to me immediately was, like, look, the Judge family and the Maris family have been flying around, like, that belongs to them to have that ball. So that was his take on it, even though a lot of people are giving him grief and everyone's like, well, what would you ask for? And he's like, I would ask for Aaron Judge not to resign and be in the American League East unless he's with the Toronto Blue Jays, which I think is a fair trade, really.
Yeah. Sign with the Blue Jays for less than the whatever $500 million that he's going to end up with in free agency. But yeah, the ball's not worth quite that much, almost that much. So I was an OG follower of Sarah Walsh on Twitter because you're a great follow, especially if you're looking for Tampa Bay Bucks information. But yeah, your Twitter account was the topic of much discussion last night, and I saw even the New York Post wrote a story about your interactions. How many followers did you pick up last night?
To be honest, I don't really follow that part. Like, every once in a while, like, all the tweet stuff, and I apparently what I tweeted last night, I did not expect it to go out the way it did. But so I didn't look. Like, I don't know how many followers I gained. All I know is that when I woke up, like, the New York Post had literally just, like, an article about the things that I had tweeted, because I basically said, I'm battling a hurricane. That's the bad news, but the good news is I can announce my retirement. Because Matt, like, I had just seen that he had gotten the ball, and then I went back and said, oh, cool, he handed it over. I'd also like to announce my divorce. Obviously, I was kidding, but, like, people took that and ran with it. So I did not expect that to be a headline in the Post today about my divorce. It was in Sports Illustrated. I had no idea. It was just so random. And honestly, I told NFL Network, because they had us on talking about it today, and I was like, look, we've been in an entire week of gloom and doom here in Florida. And it's just been kind of like all bad news all the time for over a week, right? Because it starts way before a hurricane ever arrives. And so it was such a welcome, like, reprieve of all the news that we've been dealing here to kind of just have this funny, like, lighthearted story. So that was really nice. And it was nice to be on talking about something aside from that. The Bucks here have been displaced to Miami. It's just been a lot of logistical, a week we could not have imagined, and this was sort of something we would not have imagined, but in a funny way. And actually, what was really funny is a guy that we see in Toronto where we get our hair done or haircut or whatever, he would go to the game. And so I know Matt and him had joked about, like, okay, I'll get you tickets and then we'll, like, split it. Like, literally, it's a joke. And so he texted me because he was at the game last night, and I think he was pretty close to where Judge hit the ball. And I was like, oh, my God. I was like, this is your fault. You were supposed to catch it, not Matt. Like, that was never our, like, game plan in this one. So it was just fun. Like, we've been having fun with it. And look, the Blue Jays are celebrating tonight, hopefully, because they're in the playoffs. And it's been a long season, as every baseball season is. And so hopefully it was nice to, in a loss, which clearly, you know, nobody wants, it was nice to have just something to, like, joke and laugh about.
Yeah, for sure. And Matt did the thing that we all expected him to do, and he handed the ball over. All right, so good news that Sunday Night Football will proceed as normal at Raymond James Stadium. It's a great game, too, Chiefs-Bucks. This Bucks team is weird because scoring has been an issue, and I know their receiving core has been decimated, and Mike Evans is back after the suspension for Sunday night. But yeah, Brady has been a little bit weird. Even like the delay of game penalty on the 2-point conversion and maybe asking for a timeout that he didn't have. What have you made of Tom Brady's season?
I think you summed it up pretty good. Weird. You sort of hit the nail on the head. It's so funny because before the season even kicked off, one of the sports writers here kind of said something to me. He's like, "Is something different?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "I can't put my finger on it." I'm like, "Neither can I," because the talent is there. It's just something is weird, and it's one of those things that it's not tangible. Now, what is tangible is you can go, okay, well, the numbers are certainly not the same for Brady in this offense, and then you can point to what you just said. They have been down receivers. Last week's game, Mike Evans gets suspended. And he was, like, the last semi-healthy guy they had. And there was literally, you know, I'm doing hits on the game, and I'm like, I don't know who Tom's throwing the ball to. Like, I really don't. I don't know what our options are because it's no longer option A, B, C, and D. We're on, like, F, G, H, and, like, I don't – like, we're so far down the depth chart. Like, there was just nobody available. What is positive is that this defense has been insane, and I don't think they ever get the credit they deserve because anybody that plays with Tom Brady probably doesn't get the credit they deserve because everything – is about Tom Brady all the time. And whether he plays good, whether he plays bad, whether he plays average, like, the story is Tom Brady. And so what is always lost in anything regarding the Bucs and what has been lost in the season so far is that this defense has given up almost nothing. I mean, they held the Packers and Aaron Rodgers to 14 points. And I mean, they really, it didn't even look that, it didn't even look like the Packers put that many points on the board if you're watching it. And so if that offense can just be average, that defense carries them, and they break people. They picked off Rodgers again. I mean, they have been that good and that lights out, and the offense is just not clicked. But it's hard to ask guys to click when you don't have your guys on the field. And like I said, we're not talking second string. We're talking his first five receivers were out last week. I mean, there's not really – and to think, so then I go back and think, and I try not to be, you know, a homer and try not to be rah-rah positive, but – they almost won that game at the end, which is truly insane because they didn't have an offense. And that's, I think, the one thing about Brady that is so impressive. You know, people always get caught up in the touchdowns and you know, like, these heroics. But a lot of times he's pulling things off with not, like, star power. I think not having Rob Gronkowski is a big problem. Like, they have nothing right now from the tight end position. That was his main guy. That's a huge void that they have not been able to fill. But the fact of the matter is at the end of the game last week, I'm standing there in the field, and, you know, if they convert that 2-point conversion, like, this is the game. Like, we're tied. And so just to think that he could even get them there against that team when he had nothing is a product of what they can do. And I think you look at that and go, okay, well, if they can hang and almost win a game when they've got nobody in there, what happens when you do have 3 Pro Bowl receivers back on the field? And so weird would be accurate. But I also still think that there is a lot of potential, and the NFC is down, that when all is said and done, this team can still be one of the final ones standing come January.
Yeah, I don't think anybody is ever counting out Tom Brady as long as he's on a football field.
You can't.
No, you cannot. Sarah, thanks for doing this. I'm glad to know that you're okay and everything's okay in Tampa. I'm sorry, though, that you can't retire.
Yes. nerves. Like, go back to being poor. We'll see you on TV tomorrow.
See you, Sarah.
See you guys.
There's Sarah Walsh, NFL Network reporter, wife of Blue Jays bullpen coach Matt Bushman. Imagine, not only is, Matt's a former professional baseball player. He's an employee of Blue Jays. But, just imagine the look, like, of a bullpen coach saying, you know what? I know this is weird, but I'm going to hold on to the ball and I'm going to get top dollar for this baseball. Yeah, it was obviously never going to happen. Kudos to Sarah for a great night on social media, at least. All right, we have just enough time to talk to our Toronto Maple Leafs historian who was updating the history books earlier. He joins us now, Damian Cox of the Toronto Star. How's it going?
I'm actually in the middle of updating it, so you're okay. Kind of interrupting me, but
sorry.
Fine. If necessary.
All right.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. You can update the books with the latest conclusion of a holdout. Rasmus Sandin accomplished, I don't know, he got to not skate for a week, so congratulations to him. I don't know what did we just witness here for the last week?
Now, you've been doing this long enough. You know he's not a holdout, right?
He doesn't have a contract. Yes. I know. Okay, we're parsing here, though. It's semantics, isn't it?
Well, I mean, they weren't willing to pay him what they want, so aren't they holding out?
Yeah, all right. He's just unsigned. Okay. All right. He was not holding out. He was not providing any services because he was under no obligation to provide services because he had no contract.
Read in the history book. I'm done with the history. That's what it's going to read.
That's okay. Good point.
Yeah. I just don't get it. I mean, you know, hockey agents are an interesting group. And I would think these days it's been, through COVID and everything and, with what's going on with the cap, it have been challenging times. But I have to say, of late, I'm really wondering what some of these guys are thinking. And first of all, the guys who are advising their clients to go play in Russia. They're within their rights to do it, but why would you? And my goodness, what country are you supporting by being part of that? You can do it if you want. But they're committing war crimes in Ukraine, and you're helping them. You're by going over there working for them, you're helping them. Now, do they have any other choice? I don't know, but I know the KHL usually pays more. So I would imagine they're going there for the bucks, and that's a bad choice, and the agent shouldn't be sending them. Second one about agents, in this case, and a veteran agent, why are you telling this kid not to sign for the same money that basically they're offering guys of similar quality? He's got to get in there and play. He's now behind, by a week or so or a bit more of the rest of the NHL and his Leaf teammates. Yeah, they need a defenseman. I don't think even though they're saying they want to play Mitch Martner on the back end every now and then, that's any kind of a solution. So there was a huge opportunity for him. And once you fall behind, usually the first thing that happens to a lot of these guys, they get hurt. They pull a groin muscle, they do whatever, and it ends up not being the season they want to have. This is a critical season for Rasmus Sandin and a huge opportunity. Should have been in camp, and over $100,000 or something?
Yeah, no, it was over nothing. Yeah, he basically capitulated to taking what the Leafs were offering him from the outset. What do you think of the player, though? Because there was a moment there where you thought, man, this is the next guy. And in fact, he took Morgan Rielly's job for a brief moment there on power play one, had some pretty notable miscues in the postseason. Injuries were not kind to him last year. And, when everyone was healthy this year, projected not to be inside the top six. But this is a guy that at one point, I think fans at least thought he was a top four guy. I'm sure he thinks he's a top two guy. Where do you see him landing eventually?
So talented, undersized, and unproven. And the combination of those three apparently makes you more than $1 million in the NHL. And isn't that wonderful for everybody? But, I mean, he hasn't proven – I was going to use an obscenity. Don't do it, Damien. He hasn't proven anything. he really hasn't. And part of that is because he got hurt. And part of that is because Timothy Liljegren came in and played better and vaulted up the Leaf depth chart. Now, is there an opportunity for him? Sure there is. But he hasn't proven anything to anybody. He's a low first round pick, so he's going to come in with warts. And like I say, he can come in this year now and really establish himself as an NHL regular, but he hasn't done it yet. And until you do, then you're not at that level, and that's what he's got to get done.
All right, before we let you go, you are a historian, so let's go even further back in history. Yesterday was the 50-year anniversary of Game 8 of the Summit Series, Paul Henderson's goal. How does that, the eight games there that were initially thought of when the series was scheduled as not much, turned into something pretty significant. How does that 50 years later fit into the tapestry, the rich tapestry of Canadian hockey?
Oh, my goodness. How long have I got?
a minute.
Yeah, you got 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I think it's the series, the international series and moment for Canadian hockey that will never be surpassed or matched. You can talk about 87 all you want. You can talk about 2010, you know, lots of different things. If for someone who was there, I was a school kid. We got out of school. It had such an incredible impact on it, probably in some ways because, you know, they played up the Canada good, Soviets bad angle to a large degree. But it was also a huge turning point in the history of the game in terms of opening up people's minds that people other than Canadians could play this game. And that there was this whole, you know, wealth of talent out there, not just in Russia, but in other countries that was available. And soon enough, you know, Inga Hammerstrom and Boreas Salming came along, and then the Islanders picked up a few guys. And then, you know, there were some Swedes and some Finns, and by the late 80s, there were Russians coming over in significant numbers. So there will never be a moment like that again in our lifetime, or for international hockey. I think international hockey, in terms of the passion surrounding the game, it's nothing compared to what it was in 72. We learned huge lessons, and, you know, the stories continue to grow. Should Paul Henderson be in the Hall of Fame? I think so. Should this team be honored more than they have been? Probably not, because they've been honored a lot, and they continue to be. And it's a gigantic part of hockey history and a gigantic part of our country's history, and it can't be underplayed.
I imagine when you are working on the history books, you're like wearing those white gloves, right? Like, I imagine you have many white gloves. Yeah, that's what I figured. That's what I'm picturing.
No, I'm wearing those. You know those. What do they call those little things that, you know, like poker players wear on their sleeves? That's what I'm wearing.
Oh.
A little visor.
Oh.
A little visor.
All right. Well done. Back to the history books.
I'm looking at microfiche.
Oh yes.
You don't even know what that is.
I've heard of it. I've heard tale of the microfiche. Damien, good to catch up. Talk again soon. All right. There's Damien Cox, Toronto Star. Toronto Maple Leafs historian, updating the history books as we speak. All right, it is time now for Last Call, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. No Blue Jays game tonight, naturally, and just six games remaining during the regular season. But this future bet is getting interesting. Blue Jays to complete the regular season with over 91.5 total wins. That's paying plus 450 to end up with 92 wins. The Blue Jays have to go 5-1 in the six games against the Red Sox and the Orioles. And the Red Sox are eliminated, and the Orioles, by the time they face them, will probably be eliminated. To win the American League, Blue Jays are third favorites behind the Astros and Yankees, plus 750. And let's get you some Bet Rivers specials. Well, first of all, the Thursday night football game, it is the Bengals favored by 3.5 at home, and Tua Tagovailoa and Joe Burrow to combine for over 599.5 passing yards. Tua is averaging over 300 yards per game. Burrow averaging 270 yards per game. That's paying plus 130. And that was Last Call, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. All right, Blue Jays back in action tomorrow night. They start that final home series of the season against the Boston Red Sox, but they clinched a postseason berth. They're going to do the champagne celebration tomorrow, so we'll see who wins. My money's on Vladdy being the victor in tomorrow's champagne celebration. We'll have to wait and find out. Thursday night football tonight. We'll be back tomorrow This has been the Fan Drive Time. I'm Ben Ennis, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.